Hello, it is Kiefer, and once again, backstage at Bonnaroo, I have got Amanda and Abner from Johnny Swim. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Hey, in sync. I like this.
All right, let's get right to it. The name of the band. I like a group that has a little bit of mystery or some tales about the group name. I guess everything we've heard is false. So tell me some of the good stories about how you came about Johnny Swim. Start with Jaws.
Well, could we tell you the real one? The real meaning behind Johnny Swim. We don't do this often.
No, I think it's just that it's embarrassing. There's so many bands that have well thought out names that we kind of felt like we could never come up with something. It's kind of like a tattoo. Like all of a sudden you're known for something. Like you get a tattoo that you think you're going to love forever when you're 18, and then you turn 25 and you're like, I really don't care about Chinese.
Like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have let my 13-year-old nephew draw that tattoo for me.
Exactly. So we felt like band names are kind of the same thing. We're like, we're going to be known as this for so long. So we kind of just went with a name that was a nickname. It was a nickname actually for me starting out, because I had a teacher whose name was Johnny Swim, and he was just the first one that kind of said, you know, I grew up in a musical house, and it was very easy to kind of be like, well, no, everybody just assumes I'm going to do something musical, and I'm going to be a mathematician. Like, literally, I thought I'm going to be a scientist. I don't know why. I was like in seventh grade. And so the teacher actually pulled me aside one day and was like, I saw you in the school play, and I know, he was my science teacher, I know that you really love science and you're great at it, but I really do feel like you should just ignore what everybody says, just do what's in your heart to do. And he gave me this kind of pep talk. And so whenever I would see him, I'd say, Swim, Johnny, swim. And it was kind of like my motto to like do what I wanted in life.
Her parents would always tell me that, you know, she came home from school that day and was like, you know, Johnny Swim said I should, such as Mr. Swim, Johnny Swim, da da da. And to tease her, her parents were like, all right, Johnny Swim Jr.
It wasn't
right,
really
Johnny
to tease
Swim.
Me as much as to like, because it was kind of what they were encouraging me to do anyway, and I was kind of rebelling. So they were happy that somebody else.
I think they were mad you listened to Johnny Swim.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're like, yeah.
Exactly. So that's the dull, true meaning behind Johnny Swim.
Yeah.
We got a scoop this morning. Abner, you started singing in the church. What is it about singing in the church that has turned out so many great singers over the course of the history of music? What was it for you? What kind of positive force did you get out of that?
I think the thing about growing up singing in church is that you don't, for instance, my father was a great example of this. My father never, you'd never catch him just singing in church because it was the right thing to do, or because it was like, you know, kind of cute to be singing, or because, you know, the pastor said, everybody sing along. My dad would sing at the top of his lungs every song as if it was the last song that would ever escape his mouth. And my dad was completely tone deaf. So it was one of the more embarrassing moments of my entire childhood, is this consistent memory of standing next to dad, kind of with my head bowed, trying to look reverent, but really just in sheer embarrassment. But I think the thing that breeds great singers is you'd learn at a young age, if you're doing it right, if you're going to the right church, I guess, to sing as if it was the last song you'd ever be singing. Not because people are going to like it, not because it's going to sell records, not because it's going to whatever. And so to this day, when we sing, we hope that every song is sung like it's the last one that'll escape our breath.
Tell me about meeting Amanda. Typical guy, did you want to date her or did you want to sing with her? Which came first and what led to the other?
I know this is radio, so I guess you'd have to see a picture to know what I'm talking about. But the very first thing I said, literally, this isn't an exaggeration or a Johnny Swim story. Literally, first thing I said when I saw her was, that's the girl I'm going to marry. And it wasn't some profound, deep, like, philosophical moment. She was just fine. Like, real fine. Hotter than anybody I'd ever seen.
Oh, 22.
And I was like, dear God, if there's anything, if I could get a genie to grant me one wish, I would find a way to con this chick into marrying me. I saw her that day. I got up. And she was leaving the room that we were in, and I was standing, there's a bunch of people, and she's leaving, and I had planned out every possible scenario to start a conversation with her. Whether she sees me first, I see her first, our eyes meet, we bump into each other by accident, with air quotes. And but I wasn't prepared for what actually happened. She was about 2-3 paces away from me, and I had blocked off the aisle she was walking down to where she's going to have to make some sort of interaction. And instead of saying hi, instead of hello, instead of, oh, hey, I've seen you before, or whatever, all I got from her was this brisk and direct eye roll that caused me to shrink back into my seat. And literally, I didn't see her again for 4 years from that day. And it became this myth, like, did I actually see her? Was that a dream? Was this some sort of sign not to set my sights too high, not to be too bold with my desires? But 4 years later, I met her, And I invited her over myspace.com to come to a concert I was doing. And she came up to me afterward. I had a really bad record deal when I was 18. And some nice guys, but none of us really knew what we were doing. And so it made me get to the point where I thought I would quit music forever as far as a profession. I would just do it for fun. In Nashville, there's a lot of people like that. You could just sing. If nobody ever hears you, you're going to do it because it's in your heart. And she came to a show after I invited her, came up to me at the bar after, and said, "So what are you doing with music? What are you doing with these songs?" I was like, "Nothing. I'm just kind of doing it for fun." And she said to me, "Well, that's stupid. We should write together." All I heard was, "Let's spend some time alone." That's all I heard. And so I was like, absolutely. She could have asked me to shovel horse crap. I would have spent a week doing it with her. But she wanted to write. Sweet. That's how we met.
Well, isn't that why guys start band? You know, free beer and meet girls.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Amanda, your mother, Donna Summer, did she ever give you any advice, any encouragement? Did she try to dissuade you from going in the business?
My mother never did anything but encourage us to do creative things, regardless of what it was. I mean, we could have been painters, we could have been authors, but of course music was a big thing in my family. So my dad's a songwriter and producer as well. So literally one of the first after school things, you know, when I was in kindergarten, I'd come home from school, and instead of kind of playing outside or watching TV, we would go into the studio with my dad while he was working, and he'd say, "Okay, sit in the corner and write a song about your day, and then you can go in and record it." And so literally the first recording of me singing my own original song was a song that I wrote about me doing well in my homework and my teacher giving me a star on the top, a sticker on the top of the paper, and that was what the song's about, and we still have it, and it's kind of ridiculous and nothing rhymes, but hey, I did it. So it was always encouragement to doing something, you know, really just creative, but musical was obviously the biggest and easiest thing because everybody in my family sings and everybody writes songs and everybody's really creative. I'm actually probably the least creative of my sisters. They're like,
not true.
Well, differently creative, but they're all incredibly talented at everything. So I'm the baby sister. So I just kind of took the scraps and ran with it.
You both have been here at Bonnaroo for a couple of days. You've performed, but have you had a chance to see any bands yet? Who have you seen?
We saw Jim James. We saw one song, which happens to be my
one
favorite.
And a half.
Yeah, New Life. We got to hear him sing New Life. And then we had to like, I want a new life. And then we traipsed on back to the artist compound and had to get ready for another interview, actually. So we've seen nothing. I mean, you have like, everybody's always like, oh, you go to Bonnaroo, you get to see all these great people. And so we were so excited because we're going to be here for 3 days, which 3 days in one place is kind of a lot for us at this point. So we're always, you know, traveling around.
We figured we'd have a ton of free time.
Yeah.
That has not been the case, however. I had a couple mean games of cornhole in the artist compound.
Yeah.
So that's been the main view I've had, the Tito's cornhole set.
Well, that's the one thing about when you come here, you know, there's so many radio stations and television stations and social media outlets, you know.
Let
me apologize for all of those people for taking up your
time. No apologies necessary. It's been an honor, truly, to be able to do all the interviews and stuff. We're happy.
Yeah.
We are talking to folks who have come to Bonnaroo, artists and musicians, about album art. That is one of the themes. And the record that is, it's coming out in just a couple of days,
Tuesday.
Isn't it? Tuesday.
Wow.
It's called Heartbeats. I've seen the cover art. Very suave, very debonair. Mm-hmm. Almost has kind of a Brian Ferry, Roxy Music feel to it. Who took the picture?
The picture from our album cover for Heartbeat was taken by a guy named Jeremy Cowart, who's a phenomenal photographer. And the funny part about it is that we had done a couple photo shoots. We really liked the pictures, but for some reason, we couldn't really decide on one that we loved.
And we worked with a few fantastic photographers.
Yeah, all awesome photographers, and we just all couldn't agree. And so Jeremy is a friend of ours, and he happened to spend the night at our house one night when he was visiting Los Angeles and said, "Hey, if you guys got like an hour or something, we can go. Let's go just take some pictures and just have some fun." And we were like, okay, whatever.
And I think it's because he had this new camera that he was wanting to use. Everybody shoots, you know, the Canons and whatever, and he had this new Fujifilm camera.
And he thought, let's just go outside in the back. And so we had our friend Darren over, and he held one light up, and Jeremy like took a couple shots. And I mean, we hadn't really even gotten ready. We just kind
of, we were
like,
back from a couple meetings.
Yeah.
It had just poured rain in LA, which isn't a something that happens all the time. And it's the back wall of our house that we live in.
Yeah.
So we just walked around the compound, and Jeremy teaches a lot of classes. He does a lot of sessions with how to do a lot with little. And I didn't know how to take this non-offensively, but he's like, hey, man, this should be like a session. I really love our house. This should be a session. How to do a lot with not a whole lot to have. And I was like, well, I mean, I think it's pretty. And so of all, like, you know, there's all these beautiful little silhouettes of the house that we love so much, by the trees, the bushes, whatever, da, da, da. He found the one blank wall and just shot in front of the wall. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to turn out. And it's like, it's romantic, but not romance novel. It's like
it's a little romance novel, but I like it.
I like it. It's just dark enough and kind of, it feels like the picture tells a story, which is what drew us to it. It says a lot with a little.
Right. It seemed when we all saw it, we thought, this seems like a point in a movie where something's about to go down. I don't know what it is, but something's about to happen. And so we all kind of unanimously agreed on it. But it happened very, very organically and with not a lot of work, really. There was no makeup artist or
I'm proud to say no assistants. Photoshop.
Yeah.
There was Photoshop to crop. And there was, you know what? There was a, we had just gotten shots because we're going to Indonesia in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we had just gotten shots. And Amanda is a highly hydrated person, which means you bleed a lot when you get your shots. And so she had a massive bruise right where her shot was. So the only Photoshop was to get the bruise out so people didn't think I hit her or plucked her.
Yeah, but it was very quick and just organic, which is we kind of liked as well.
We're also asking people to pick out their favorite Beatles album cover, and we've been doing this for a couple of days now, and I know it can be tough, and some people like the music better than the album cover, but if you can, pick out one of the albums that really draws your eyes to it.
So for me, the obvious answer, and it almost makes me not want to pick it, is the White Album. It's just, to me, it's epic. It reminds me of all the things that no longer can be cool anymore because the Beatles did it first. But then immediately I look next door to the Magical Mystery Tour, and you remember just how much drugs these guys must have done. And I think I like that one better.
I know. I was looking at the White Album too. It's just amazing how many things kind of came from that one. But I'm going to go with Abner's answer. Let's go with Magical Mystery Tour.
Because that just looks like a party. That could be like a Barney
That could cover. Be anything.
That could be like a murder mystery. That could be a horror film.
Or I mean, somebody had to come up with that font on the top right there. I don't know what font that is. I don't think anybody could really recreate that super well either.
No.
This could be recreated, the White Album. That's been recreated. This can never be redone.
I mean, and there's so many. Obviously, there's so many epic pictures and like silhouettes and things that just stand alone. But man, they were high.
It's a pleasure to meet both of you.
It's so nice to meet you.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Abner and Amanda, it's Johnny Swim, and we are backstage at Bonnaroo.